Honorable Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
Good morning. Be seated, please. The only case in our calendar this morning is 97-434, Disciplinary Counsel versus Allen. Justice Resnick has recused herself from this case. We're pleased to have sitting in place of Justice Resnick, Judge Peter Hanwerk, who is a judge of the Court of Appeals sitting in the 6th District. Welcome.
Good morning.
Judge Hanwerk. Mr. Haefeli.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. Please report. Judge Allen was found by a panel, acted by the Board of Commissioners, with violated several, actually three judicial disciplinary rules. And the one is that they have passed for abuse of prestige of her office, which advanced the prosecution interests of others. The other two involve more general things as to impair the integrity and independence of the judiciary and the appearance of compliance. But those two actually, I think, depend in large part of the
Judge Allen had actually only sought to advance her interest, her judicial position, as apparently stated in the letter to disciplinary counsel, and as a byproduct thereof, advance the interest. All of that was not her goal, to advance the interest of the law firm. As a byproduct, of course, she did that. Would that matter to the whether or not the disciplinary rule was violated?
With respect to the willfulness, it would have an impact on it because...
What is your definition? We should probably get to that, too. What's your definition of willful?
Yeah, and I thought of an analogy. In the brief filed by the relator before the board, they cited criminal rules and knowledge. There's knowledge is used in the criminal code, and there was a case they cited where knowledge was involved in a disciplinary matter, was defined the same way. Here we have purpose is the criminal code, and the disciplinary code is willful. Now, those are different words. If they were intended to mean the same, they would have. But I would even so go further and say, analogously to, say, a murder case. You, with purpose, fire the gun, but you don't have purpose to kill. There's a difference there. They're just saying, well, because she voluntarily participated in the commercial, wasn't hypnotized or whatever. Therefore, it follows that her intent was to advance the private interest of the other. Now, the way this Disciplinary Council phrases it, oh no, they're saying that we have to prove or that she purposely intended to violate the canon of ethics. No, that's not so. We think they have to prove that her purpose was to advance the private interest of others, and there's no evidence of that at all. None.
But then you don't think that if it's the byproduct, it must be the sole purpose of a respondent to advance, or can't be a byproduct of a purpose to advance your own interests?
Well, I mean, you're talking about willfulness and connection with a disciplinary violation. I say, no. Interestingly, disciplinary counsel cites the Flanagan case. And that basically goes to willfulness. So there are a couple of things in there. Two of the last three headnotes talk about, and I'm going to quote them so I don't get it wrong. When examining the judge's conduct for ethical violations, the Supreme Court was considering the impact such conduct might reasonably have upon knowledgeable observers, and then the duty to avoid creating an appearance of impropriety is one of taking reasonable cautions to avoid having a negative effect on the confidence of thinking public administration of justice. So it's not a lowest common denominator here. Now, I don't think any knowledgeable person or thinking person could view this tape, which I know you will do, and conclude from that this is an endorsement of Harmon Davis and Keith. She's a judge. She's wearing a robe. She's sitting on the bench, which is what she does every day, which is what you're doing right now. There's no endorsement. She doesn't smile at the lawyers and say, hey, you guys are really great. He won again, 47 straight time or anything, nothing like that. She's just there doing what she does. A judge in her room. And she admitted, I think we've all agreed, it would be better if she had not done so. One reason is because we're all here talking about it. But it doesn't mean that her purpose was to use the prestige of her office to advance the private others, number one. And number two, whatever her purpose was, it did not. The prestige of her office is not used to advance the private interests of others. Everybody knows lawyers go to court, and courts are presided over by judges. As we mentioned, in that particular time, her name was mud as far as the public was concerned because of this smear campaign run by Channel 9 calling her a slum landlord, which they subsequently apologized for, a very small thing, the newspaper buried in the back. The damage was done. If I were a lawyer and wanted to use a judge's prestige to advance my interest in a commercial, I would not pick someone who's been blasted by the press.
Mr. Hayford, would it be fair to sum up your position by saying that had she come to you before this occurred, you would have advised her not to do it? Now that she has done it, there isn't technically a violation, but that she wouldn't do it again.
Well, certainly she said that.
So that would be fair to sum up your position.
Well, I don't know how it's done. I think it's too...
Where would you expand or detract from that?
Okay, because again, when we get into legal issues, this is not using... And the reason I would advise her not to do it is because, again, in the planning case, they talk about the thinking public and the knowledge of the public.
Wait a minute, that's what I said as my middle...
But they're not all thinking and they're not all knowledge.
That's what I said as my middle part, that she did not have a violation. Isn't it your contention there is no violation?
Correct.
Okay.
But I would still advise her not to do it because...
Yeah, I understand.
Again, number one, here we are in all this trouble. And number two, this planning points out there are these unthinking, unknowledgeable people. It's my understanding that they came to light that someone anonymously said that we don't have anybody testify. Yes, I saw this sticker and I thought it was endorsed. We don't have it. We just have the commercial. And this is where our council said we want to strip by, but the fact is that she's at the commercial and so she's building this condo. And I think we have to look more deeply. I don't want to spend a lot of time going through all the factors, but the stresses that were pressing in on her at the time that she made this very split second, last minute, spur of the moment decision. But there is one, and one was really, what concerns me is the way the board treated it. Both the relator and the board said, well, there was this litigation, but that she won that suit about 2 years before, so that was over. Of course, the appeal was pending, and we all know that cases aren't over until the highest court.
Well, I guess, Mr. Hayford, I read all that, and I guess I really wondered what that has to do with whether her conduct here violated the code of conduct, whether it was willful, and whether what she did was a violation of the code of conduct. Not to diminish the stresses, I admit you made a good case for that, but that doesn't really suggest that she should have left her chambers or office and put on a robe and appeared in a TV commercial, should it? I don't know. I don't
suggest that she should have done that, but it explains why she did. In a way, I think it results in reduces culpability beneath the willfulness, which is required. It must be proved by clear and convincing evidence.
I agree with the Chief Justice, and I think you have a tough argument there in light of the fact that in the role of a judicial officer, one could first make the argument that, boy, it's a stressful job, and yet the job is decision making, and so this judge Adams making decisions, is that the relator puts, I think, a pretty a tough argument against that if you're a decision maker by trade, and then you say, well, this one decision was affected by my outside pressures in my life. I didn't think it through clearly. Is that a defense?
I think so. Again, the testimony also is really doesn't mention, although obliquely they do, is that she testified. I was focused on two things. I had all this stuff pressing on my son, and doing the best job I could do as a judge. I shut everything else down. But here, she's in chambers, court's over, she has the she's sitting there with no decisions to make. A phone call comes, yeah, come on over, and he's by courtroom, and then the TV guy sticks his head and takes it out here. Of course, we did, she's enrolled and everything else, all the pressure to back. But she testified, and the board seemed to think that's a weakness. They complained, we didn't put in evidence that her decision making was effective. Well, of course we didn't. Number one, it wouldn't be true, and number two, that would raise an even greater problem.
Isn't that offered in mitigation for the penalty to be imposed as opposed to whether or not the violation occurred?
Both?
But how does it affect the violation? That's the Chief Justice's question.
Yeah.
It's mine as well.
Willfulness. And it has to do with what scienter, what purpose you have to have.
But does ignorance, I mean, it sounds like at some point you're saying this particular respondent was ignorant of the potential impropriety, appearance of impropriety of the act. Does that mean the act wasn't committed? Willfulness is not there?
No, if you accept this as our counsel, their interpretation of what willfulness, strict liability just for doing the act, anything that goes on up here, then we lose that point, although I still think we prevail because the prestige of her office is nothing that commercial in the fact that she was a judge. And everybody, every knowledgeable thinking person knows the lawyers go to courtrooms. And courtrooms can't courtrooms to find judges.
Wouldn't willfulness here be distinguished by a factual situation in which the judge perhaps is in her courtroom after session and lawyers come in and say, Judge, we'd like to use your courtroom for a few minutes. Is that all right? And she says, sure. And she's still there. They come in and they do a TV spot. She's working on entries or whatever. Doesn't realize that she's in a TV spot, but she's there. She didn't willfully participate in the production of a TV spot in that instance. In this instance, she did, didn't she? That's where the willfulness is it
There's
not?
There's a difference. The willfulness, I think, has to go beyond the decision to, yes, they ask me to come out, I'll come out without thinking. We say willfulness means more than that. Willfulness means they want me to use the prestige of my office to advance the private interests of others, not going to do it.
Well, we have, as you know, Mr. Hapley, we see too many cases. Fortunately, this is not one of them. We see too many cases where lawyers, because of their, or at least in part because of their abuse of alcohol or drugs, violate the code of professional responsibility. And we don't say that you haven't committed the act or the conduct that causes you to violate the code of conduct, but we look at their condition in mitigation, in the sanction, not to determine whether conduct violated the code, do we? I mean, isn't this not an alcohol problem, obviously,
right.
But it's the same kind of situation, it seems to me, where...
I'm not so sure that it is, and I think that you have to look down on a case-by-case basis and see what the conduct was in the first place and what generated it in the second place. The fact that and those things usually go on for a period of time. Here we have a split-second decision. Perhaps you may have judgment, but not an ethical violation. I mean, every instance of bad judgment committed by a judge is an ethical violation. Most of my practice would be gone, and you know, I'll be doing something else. That's why we have appellate courts. And I think, analogously again, and I don't recall the exact phrase, when you talk about abuse of discretion, arbitrary, capricious, and there's something in the words I can't think of, unconscionable, and you reverse a judge for doing that. Something like that, a judge does something unconscionable and arbitrary and capricious in violation of abuse of his discretion. That's a lot worse than what happened here, but we don't have grievances filed against the judge for doing
it. Did she feel that she would benefit in any way from doing this?
The letters that she wrote to the disciplinary council, again, those were written one like 4 days after she first heard about it. So she didn't know that the grade was being run until she got the letter district council didn't show it. But she said, well, number one, they're positive role models for the attorneys, myself, and the African-American community, which is a benefit, I guess, to all African-American legal professionals. And Hamilton County had a tough time. She was the first African-American elected countywide, judicially or otherwise, and it wasn't until 1987. They couldn't get in the Bar Association for about 100 years. So it's been tough. So she and the other African-American legal professionals are always concerned about their image. Secondly, she wrote a letter saying there was basically a deal made between her party and the other party, and she would be unopposed, but it just happens in Hamilton County, a lot of times a white lawyer will say, well, this is a tailor made, I'm going to jump in here and run, maybe I'll get elected. That didn't happen, and she, in her second letter, she said, this commercial again was a positive picture of me, which would possibly discourage any candidate. Then later, when the grievance was filed, we started going through all this, you know, all these things came through, and she still didn't know when she wrote those letters that she had this great perspective or not.
So you might have taken it by what you said that the answer was yes.
I think you might have yes or no. I'm sorry. And the question again was whether she would think that it would benefit herself.
Yes.
That was the subject of her letters. Looking back on it, the hindsight is 2020, I'm not sure she gave that much thought at all. Again, reasons can become the phone, reasons as well. We're lawyers, we put the best face on things, and think about what we're like thinking. Here it is. But I do think her intent is better for herself.
Mr. Hafley, if we were to decide that there should be no sanction in this case, how would we write the opinion to let lawyers or judges know, and lawyers know that the code does not permit judges to appear in TV ads or ads that are for the commercial use of the lawyers? How would we write that? Would we say that we shouldn't do that, but here there are extenuating circumstances, or do you think we should write it saying there's not a violation, that that's all right to do that?
Well, I would do it this way of saying, in this particular instance, and I believe this with all my heart, there's not sufficient evidence by clear and convincing evidence that the conduct was willful, or that it was intended to advance private interests of others. However, henceforth, don't do this. That's what the problem cost panel initially for. Shouldn't do it. Not enough. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Brown.
Good morning. May it please the court. First of all, counsel for respondent begins by attempting to tie the canons together so that the ultimate violation, or the only important violation, if I can use that term, is the fact that she, in his words, intended to benefit the private interests of that law firm. Well, first of all, I don't think you can focus on one of the three canons that the board found that she violated. I think each of the three, canon one, canon two, and canon 2B, are equally important. And I think the fact that she appeared in the commercial, by virtue of being in the commercial, she advanced the private interests of the law firm. I don't think she perhaps even intended to do it, nor do I think we need to prove that she intended to do it. She was in the commercial. And in fact, when you review the board's report, they found that the videotape alone was clear and convincing evidence of the violations of 1, 2, and 2B.
Counsel, these lawyers appear in this judge's courtroom.
They did prior to Judge Allen being notified by relayer.
Do they, as a matter of course, practice there?
Yes.
Cameras are allowed in courtrooms, are they?
Yes.
Let's change the fact situation, given what you just said. They try a case in a courtroom, they send a video crew.
Who sends a video crew?
The lawyers do.
Well, then I'm hearing a different question. Are you talking about news media in a courtroom?
No, they hire their own, I mean, when we allow cameras in this courtroom, we it can only be with legitimate news organizations. I mean, I don't think most court rules have that. If someone else asks to videotape a courtroom scene, whether or not they're a news organization, I don't think it's the threshold question. So,
okay.
Say the lawyers have hire a crew and subject to the same restriction, keep the cameras on, film some of a real trial. Now later they decide that this is pretty good footage and we're going to use excerpts from this in a commercial promoting our law firm. Is that a violation for the judge?
I see it as entirely different. Say that under your
well, that, then the film would not per se be a violation.
No, but in this case, it was clear and convincing evidence because it's clear that all it is a commercial. It's not a courtroom scene in terms of an actual trial. It's not that at all. It's the lawyers talking to the judge, the lawyers talking to one another, and it's clearly a commercial. I mean, you get the big panoramic advertisement for the law firm in the beginning and at the end, and in this situation, you consider all the facts, and I think what you're talking about gets into the willfulness issue. She willfully, they came into her office and said, will you come and sit on the bench in your robe? She said yes, and so she did. Yeah, and so I think that if you've got her during a pending case, during a currently litigated case on the bench, I don't think that's willful. I think you know, that's not a violation.
So it's better for a law firm to run a commercial with a phony judge than a real judge sitting behind the bench.
Sure. I mean,
is that good for the profession?
Well, I think I'm not so sure if it's good for the profession.
To have an actor appearing to be
you have to have an actor.
To be the judge.
I think you have to have an actor. I do not think you can have an actual sitting judge with her nameplate on the bench appearing in a commercial for a law firm that appears in her courtroom, that is a local Cincinnati law firm. And I'm not even saying it would make a difference if it was a Cleveland law firm, but in this case it was a Cincinnati law firm. I don't think that you can do anything other than have an actor. You have to have a judge in your commercial. But I don't think you can go in, and I don't think a judge can agree to appear in a commercial for a law firm.
Would it make any difference if the nameplate did not appear in the ad? How many people viewing that ad would know who that person was without the nameplate?
I don't know how many people would know, and I don't know. I know statistically that the commercial appeared 30 times, approximately, on 30 different days between the end of June and the beginning of August. I don't have any idea in the Cincinnati market how many people saw that or who would know who Judge Allen was without the nameplate.
So it makes no difference whether the public at large recognizes or doesn't recognize the person who is sitting on the bench. The mere fact of being in the commercial, even if the nameplate wasn't there, but the judge being in that commercial is a violation of the code.
I believe so, yes. I don't know how you cut bright lines, or maybe not bright lines, just I don't know how you define, other than to say that to appear in a commercial for a law firm violates the canons.
Counsel, this is wide of the subject, but we're into it. To assume a judge wants to do a commercial for election purposes in his or her courtroom, right? And to make it look more realistic, once lawyers setting a counsel table. Are lawyers allowed to do that, or does that get lawyers into some sort of violation, or the judge into some sort of violation, or do you have to have actors in that situation as well?
To answer that question, I'm not sure under those facts. I think that you raise a question, certainly under the canons, because what you have is an appearance perhaps of impropriety, because another lawyer might say, hey, that's Judge so-and-so, and he must be her buddy. You know, they're at the counsel table. Well, yeah. I'm not going to litigate against him. I think you raise the appearance of impropriety. I to be on the safe side, I would caution against that. And clearly, this isn't a situation where we're giving advisory opinions
right. Or
hypotheticals, but we're presented with a situation where there was a law firm commercial for the law firm, not for the judge. And I would venture a guess that we would not be here if it was Judge Allen's political commercial and not Harmon Davis and Keith's commercial.
Well, the lawyers might be here, though.
Perhaps.
May I ask a question?
Sure.
Because I guess I'm troubled about what seems like a lack of a defined standard. I know what the standard is. I hear all the words that you're using regarding willful an intent, et cetera. And I don't have much difficulty understanding that she willfully rose from her chair, got up, went into the courtroom, et cetera. To find a willful violation of the canons, however, I think is a little bit longer stretch. We have well-defined understandings of what abuse may be or clear and convincing evidence. Those are all well-written and defined. You have to reach, it seems, to Connecticut and Oregon to give us cases that are somewhat analogous. Where in Ohio is a judge to know, other than by perhaps some analogy to the, if I know it when I see it, or I know it if I do it, that it's wrong? It seems that that's where we are, still in some very gray area for judges. And yes, while we may know it, it doesn't seem that in this instance it's that well defined. And I wonder if you have any other assistance to provide us with other than the DARE card and the picture in the gallery of whatever it was in a department store window to assist a judge in knowing when it's going to be a violation of these specific canons, or do we just have to know it?
I think there's two parts to the answer. I think, first of all, that there is somewhat of a, yes, you just have to know it. However, with the caveat that if we waited around, for lack of a better phrase, to litigate each and every one of these cases, in this case, for example, that there are no other cases where we have, that I can find anywhere in the country, with a judge appearing in a commercial for a law firm. So if we say in Ohio that, yes, that was wrong, now we have a case. But unfortunately, Judge Allen is the test case. And so she is being disciplined for a violation that she didn't know was a violation, essentially.
So but nevertheless, she just has to know it.
This court needs to decide that it is a violation. I don't think that every possible judicial behavior, for example, Judge Flanagan in the Connecticut case was disciplined for having an affair with a married court reporter. And I think the last thing he thought was that, you know, perhaps it's a moral transgression, but it's not a violation of the disciplinary code. And he was disciplined for that, finding that if we don't discipline him, then how are other judges going to know that we find this to be against the public interest, to be the appearance of impropriety, those types of things. At no one's expense am I suggesting that we have to start somewhere. However, this tape, as counsel for respondent mentioned, was sent to us anonymously. And so somebody saw it. Somebody was concerned about it. I don't know, if we don't start here, I don't know where we start.
Counsel, thank you. Just in the thinking through television commercials, which I'm not fond of in the first place, but if we're going to have actors, let me take the actors in the situation. I'm just wondering how good is that as opposed to a real judge just appearing to perform their normal function and not interacting any more than that in a few seconds in a commercial. Let's take the actors and now this law firm's going to be real creative, cloak this person with a robe and the bench and all of that, and then have them interact in a very positive way. Great job, Charlie. Give them a little speech. You did really good things for your client, as you always do in this courtroom. And now the whole image of the judiciary has been potentially damaged, has it not? Or is that some other violation?
I think that's entirely an issue, excuse me, for the law firm, as opposed to the fact that they and their advertising agency wrote a script where they have an actor as a judge. I think it's a totally different issue. And I'm not sure how effective or ineffective it would be, but I am suggesting strongly that if you have an actual judge on a bench with real lawyers, there's an appearance of impropriety.
Well, isn't Canon 2B your strongest? A judge should not lend the prestige of her office to advance the private interests of others. There's no secret about, I mean, that's not very difficult to understand, is it?
No, I don't believe it's difficult at all.
I think your argument is that, I thought your strongest argument was that by putting on a robe and going into at the request of the law firm and the producers, going in and putting on a robe for what for them was certainly an advancing their, hopefully they were, I mean, they were hoping to advance their private interest, I guess, by running this TV ad. They hoped to get business, I assume, from the TV ad. And she lent her prestige of her office to that. Isn't that the simple, I mean, that doesn't seem to me to be too difficult to comprehend, I guess.
No.
The question is then becomes this whether she intended that. But gosh, I mean, the 2B is pretty clear, it seems to me, that you can't do that. Then the question is all the other factors, the willful nature and the argument and so forth. But I guess I'm not, well, anyway. But.
I don't know, to go back to the earlier argument on 2B, I don't know whether you can read into the canon that you have to intend to advance the private interests. I think the canon reads that you lend the prestige of your office to advance. And I believe that by appearing in the commercial, she did in fact lend the prestige of municipal court judge, maybe Lovelace Allen, to advance the private interests, which were the law firm of Harmon Davis and Keyes.
Does that happen to us when we write a letter to get somebody into law school?
There's an advisory opinion on that.
You remember what it says? I'm getting a little worried sitting here.
Well, I could go through the advisory opinion, but if you're writing a letter of reference for somebody that you know personally, then there are exceptions to that. If you're just using Justice Andrew Douglas as for commercial purposes, perhaps, then it's a different thing.
That's all right.
If you personally know the person that you're writing the letter of recommendation for, then it's not. And I'm not suggesting that Judge Allen didn't personally know these lawyers. She did.
If you personally know the person, you can't?
You can.
You can?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Brown. Mr. Haefele, you've used your time. It'd take 30 seconds, if you like.
First of all, your last question, Mr. Chief Justice. It's not just by being in the commercial, put the robe on, she had a robe on before they asked what's up, put on the purple. It's not letting the prestige of her office. It's not like the public would say, gee, here are these lawyers, and they're before an actual judge.
Well, she's not, your argument is, I think she's not vouching. She's by sitting at a bench, she's filling in a seat in the set, and she's not vouching for them.
But Ms. Brown indicated, well, her nameplate wasn't there, and people didn't know who she is, and that would be a different question. Well, I would suggest that that cannot be a possibility of violation of this canon, and I think the court should settle for it.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. The marshal, please adjourn court.
All right.